And right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. If I have done everything correctly, which we'll find out in just a few moments, we'll welcome in Janet Manco. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Wayne and Van.
And Cynthia Hosmeister. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning, and don't forget to mention the cats, which have to be fed.
Not only fed, but last night, I do a lot of work, and you folks must do this too at home on our computers. And I could get through to the station this morning, but I couldn't get through to all the audio and news files, which I needed to put things together. And I came in, and our cat AM decided to raid the back of the equipment cabinet and knock two of our 4 terabyte servers not only down, but unplug them.
So what you say to Barnes is you can't make this bleep up.
So you never know
what you're going to find or who's going to be responsible
after
for
After 20 minutes of setting everything up, here we go, we're normal. But anyways, people don't realize that what we do, Janet and Cynthia, the people that work in either broadcasting or the newspaper industry, it's not like it used to be where there were 25 to 30 people that we all have, because of economy, slimmed down staffs, and we all do so much more than what is apparent to people. So
it's so true. And, you know, you're extraordinary. Of course, radio is different, but it's extraordinary how small staff you have. Very talented, though.
Yeah, it was the same thing at the Journal. And that's why when people say, well, why you ask for money? This is why we ask for money, because we need money to operate and do things. We can't cut anymore. We are where we are.
That's right.
All right, let's go right to the page. And I am going to bypass everything else for the word cowabunga. I'm not so sure how many people nowadays understand what cowabunga means, but that picture is as good a definition as anything.
I asked my 27-year-old daughter if she knew what it meant. She said, well, yeah, you know, when you jump in the water. But I think of it as a surfing term. And, of course, I learned it from the Peanuts cartoons, from Snoopy saying cowabunga when he went surfing. But, it is one of those California 60s expressions, but it really is about being in the water with your feet. Wonderful photo from Caroline Birchfield of students from the Hotchkiss School who were able to jump into the lake, raise funds for the Jane Lloyd Fund, which they were not, of course, able to do last year. And as you know, all of you all, there are many years when the spring splash is held and they have to take firefighting equipment to use a giant saw and cut through the ice for people to be able to get in and wear special gear. So nice that the water's melted and that they could go in, and but still, for the young heart and the young at heart.
You know, it's been a pretty busy time for the Region 1 Board of Education. They always, for people, and unfortunately most people don't go to these meetings, hopefully they watch them, a lot of diverse things happened, like they had the budget meeting where they're going to move the budget forward to a vote. Kevin Baldwin was named the new director of the Housatonic Musical Theater Society. So for you folks that complain that you don't know what's going on at your local high school, yes, you can read the paper and get it all done there, but you can also view it and get interested. So those are two stories that you've got on your front page.
There's actually three of them. And so one of them is the regional school budget, which is education is the largest part of our regional budgets. There's each town has its own town education budget, and then the 6 towns in the northwest corner share a regional education budget that pays not only for the high school, but also for the regional administration services and for special education. And we're going to do a story in our next week's paper just reminding people, people often say to me how boring the budget stories are and they don't really read them, but this is really, you know, why a newspaper exists largely, is to inform you about things that you need to know about how your tax dollars are being spent, which is, you know, that's the basis of democracy, is you should know what your government is doing. And as you say, people really don't like it when they feel like they've missed something. So do read the regional budget story, even if it's just to find the date for the vote, which will be May 4th. As far as I know, it's being held at town halls as per normal. I know Kent has already sent out an email saying, you know, the vote will be on May 4th at town halls. Do go out and vote. It's important to show your support. If you support it, I would say that this has been a pretty quiet budget year. Even Marshall Miles seems to be happy.
I'm very happy with the, you know, people come to me all the time. I'm extremely happy with the Region 1 Board of Education. I think that they are operating at a level of transparency which is terrific. I'm a happy camper.
Well, which is great. And when you're happy, everybody's happy. And at the bottom of the article, we have the assessments. The assessments are very confusing. they're done based on the student population on October 1st of the prior year. So the budget for this coming year is based on the student population as of last October 1st. And it's not only the number of students per town that go to the high school, it's also the percentage of those students of the whole. And so it shifts. You know, it's interesting when they organized the North Canaan FEMA vaccine truck in North Canaan yesterday, and Janet sent me a great article from Connecticut Mirror saying Charlie Parati had gone to the government and said, hey, you know, we're in this little tiny town. We're just a few thousand people here at North Canaan. But, of course, to us here in Region 1, North Canaan is one of the big towns, and they're getting hit with a very large assessment this year. I think they've had a couple of big assessments the last few years. The towns generally do keep on top of it. Sam Herrick in Region 1 has, you know, they do studies to try and estimate, based on who's in elementary school, what the school population is going to be in high school, so towns can plan ahead. But it's, you know, it's a big hit. They're getting an increase of $395,000, spending $4,700,000. It's a lot of money, so people should definitely be reading these stories and following through. Also at that meeting, Ian Strever named the salutatorian and the valedictorian, both from Salisbury. Charlotte Clulow is the valedictorian. Mia Tittman is the salutatorian. Graduation coming up June 17th. They're hoping to have it actually at the school on the green. Last year they had it at Landmark Park because of COVID. Often it's had to be held indoors. If it's raining, we'll hope for good weather.
You know, going back to those town assessments, the town of Salisbury does something that not many other towns do. They put money away every year. And when they're hit with a year where they have a big assessment, they have the funds to put towards it. And I think that more towns should take a look at what the Salisbury Board of Education does, because they're not as drastically affected. They don't, if they have like a year where there's a $300,000 increase, they can whack it down to like $100,000 with no problem. So
They know it ahead of time, and it is sometimes discouraging when you see these towns where they're just like, "What? We didn't know we were going to have that many students," and it's, you know,
it's tough. Got a great story by Patrick Sullivan and storm outages, repairs. We all know how we feel personally, but people don't understand really what goes behind all the complexities with those things.
Right, and so this is it's actually a history story. It's talking, and a story about rarities, which is electromagnetic storms that knock out our power grid. But as Marshall's saying, it's really a lot about how hard it is to make a repair to our electrical system when there's been a problem such as an electromagnetic storm, or as we've had in recent years with really extreme weather. So very interesting. And, you know, I think that we all would love it if Eversource was 100% perfect all the time. And they aren't always as quick as we'd like them to be. But you can tell from the story, it's complex.
Interesting story that I talked about, that I found out about by, I look at towers and things like that, and there was a tower application for Salisbury for a cell phone tower, and I looked and I said, geez, where is this going? Well, folks, if you want to know where it's going, open up the paper, because it's a story by Patrick Sullivan that covered the Board of Selectmen's meeting, and it's going where Wake Robin is, and it'll be interesting to see what the public thinks.
It is going to be interesting, and in fact, Shafin Sharif, who's one of the owners of the Wake Robin, had called us a year ago and said, you know, we're having these conversations with the cell tower company. We feel that it's a community service, but without them having said it, whoever owns the land that a tower goes on does get significant rent money from the phone company and the tower company. So, you know, as all of our inns are doing pretty well right now, but it's been a long, challenging past 10 years for inns, as people have changed the way that they travel. There's no longer, you know, waves of people coming up for leaf peeping, and then, of course, there was COVID. So, you know, we all do want to see the Wake Robin remain a wonderful place for weddings. But also, if you've lived in Lakeville, which is really one of the more affluent parts of the Northwest Corner, the cell connection is astonishingly bad. And somebody actually said to me over dinner the other night, like, oh, we're so excited that they're going to get this tower at the Wake Robin. But I think that what Marshall is indicating is, as seasoned campaigners, we know that it doesn't really matter how much you need the tower. There is going to be pushback. And we've seen this recently in Kent, where there's a very dangerous section of Route 7, very windy, very hilly, where there are frequently very bad accidents. And the people who live in that road often act as sort of a watch out, and they keep an eye out, and then they'll phone 911 from their home, because you really can't 911 from the road. This is, I think, less of an auto danger, this particular part of town, but people, for instance, who live along the lake, who live along Wells Hill Road, really have bad service and I think would like to get it, and we'll see what kind of support the tower proposal gets. But Patrick gives explicit instructions on how to see the application, which I just printed out. It's 212 pages.
They're designed to make you not be able to follow them.
Yeah, but they're, you know, nobody can say they're holding stuff back. Like, if there's anything you want to know about that tower, it's in those 212 pages. But the short version of it is they're looking at putting a tower on the Wake Robin Inn property just off Wells Hill Road. They will do the balloon float, as they've always done. It's a very large property. It's fairly hidden from view, so we'll see.
Yep. A couple of nice stories about people being honored at North Canaan. First of all, the honoring of Paul Roy, and then the River Access will honor Fred Ruggles.
I think Charlie Parati is the most brilliant first selectman in his quiet little way. And so Paul Roy retired after 27 years on the town crew, and forget about giving him a watch. They gave him his favorite Skag mower, which they said it was given to him exactly as it was when he used it. Well-worn, held together with tape wrapped around the handlebars and essential bungee cords, which I think is the funniest thing ever. And I think he was delighted to have it. And who doesn't want to spend their retirement pottering around mowing their lawn? And then Fred Ruggles, who really hasn't been here in my lifetime. He moved to Canaan in 1980, died in 2013 at the age of 90. And if you're driving into North Canaan or out of North Canaan, you can probably see there's a newly built staircase down to the Housatonic River, which will be a new river access. For years now, but especially last year, really a big struggle in many towns with safe access to the river for people who come up from the city and want to splash around and cool off. There's been some very dangerous situations where they like to go down by waterfalls. We'll hope that they will choose not to do that in favor of going to this spot where there will be parking, there will be bathrooms, there will be garbage cans, and safe access. But they're naming it in honor of Fred Ruggles, who was a hydrologist and very active community participant.
All right, and you've got a small little story, but it's important, and that is if people in Sharon want to follow the budget process, you've got a story on page A5 that talks about the Board of Finance, the meetings they'll have, and that there will be a public vote at a town meeting on the budget and more, because we all have to start to come out of this pandemic that we've been in, where people are used to not going to meetings. Well, not used to it. They don't go. They never went to meetings a lot before, but still it's even worse now, so...
it might be interesting to see if people who started going to meetings on Zoom kind of thought, oh, yeah, actually, there's stuff I need to know. I should at least tune in because, of course, Robin, you guys have the recordings on YouTube. Or is it YouTube or Vimeo?
We have them up on Vimeo. But, yeah, I think these are all here to stay. I think you'll be able to go eventually and be there live and also watch it on computer as well, which will be a benefit for everybody, hopefully.
Yeah. So we will have a listing in next week's paper as much as possible of what the schedule is for all the six towns for their budget.
Yeah.
An obituary for Diane Hewitt, a great loss, although I think she'd been ailing for quite some time. But really an extraordinary person, and they don't make them like that anymore, literally.
No, and you know what I also noticed in your obituaries, a good friend and a dedicated public servant who did a lot over the New York State Line, Jim O'Malley, passed away. I worked with Jim and his Lions Club work and what he did throughout the town there for many, 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 many years. He became a very good friend of mine, so... Jim passed away also, so I just wanted to thank him and his family for the work that he did for our area when he was with the Lions Club. I want to go on, before we go to Compass, there's a lot to talk about on the editorial and opinion pages. Janet, you have the editorial, One of the Good Changes in the Area.
That's right. People may remember that back in 2017, the Lakeville Journal sold its Lakeville building at 33 Bissell Street to Salisbury Bank. And, you know, it's been a while now, and not much happened with it for a while, but we talk about the process the bank went through, and now that building is finally partially open and, due to COVID, not fully open. But really, what a difference in that area, a difference for the people who work at Salisbury Bank and a difference for neighbors to that building. It's really... great for the neighborhood on Bissell Street, and we wish them the best in that building. We had a good run there from 1982 to 2017 after it was built by Bob Esterbrook and his cohorts, and we're glad to see it having new life once again.
There's before we get to the letters and everything, the turning back the pages, it just struck my memory. 25 years ago, the selectmen in Salisbury will recommend WQQQ Radio of Lakeville to be the preferred tenant for the town-owned historic former railroad depot at a town meeting. And you know the backstory to that is Bob Smithwick was working on me before we were on the air for about, because he heard that we were going to try to put a radio station on. And he said, if you come to Lakeville, I'll make sure you can get in. You can get into the railroad station." And the town voted for it overwhelmingly, and it was a great place to operate a radio station out of that small little railroad station. So it's funny to see it in there. And it makes me even feel older now that it was 25 years ago.
I know, it was 25 years ago. But, you know, that little building had a good run for radio stations.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. I don't know how long ago I would have thought it was, but that's why this column is great that Norma does for us, you know. Oh, it was 1996. Wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Now, you've got, once again, I think there's something to do with the pandemic, because once again, a lot of letters on a lot of different topics, Janet.
Yeah, really good topics and very thoughtful. So definitely read all these letters. All of them make good points. It's about affordable housing, of course. It's about housing in Salisbury and Falls Village, but it's also about broadband access. And Catherine Palmer Payton is telling us we all need to pitch in, as she's so good at. And so, yeah, give them a read. They really are a good read. So thank you to everyone who writes, and keep writing.
And Lonnie Carter, Matt Gordon, and Peter Riva all have great columns. Matt Gordon, Pros and Cons of the Infrastructure Bill, The Alternative Gourmet Protein by Peter Riva, and Bert Williams, done by Lonnie Carter.
Right. Lonnie Carter does these historical columns for us, and really interesting. I was unfamiliar with Bert Williams, but, you know, now I know. And Lonnie has his own style, of course, and it's lively and really gives you a feeling of what it was like back then.
Yeah, I think that's – I love when you can get background information. I think this is what makes a journal even more special, especially with people moving into the area, where you can not only follow the news that's going on now, but you get background fill information about what the area was like over the past 100 to 200 years. I think it's kind of cool.
It is, and I hope that people enjoy reading it. And, you know, let us know when you want to know more about something. We've been hearing back about the archive photo Cynthia's been running, especially that tennis photo. So they're, people are looking at it, and it's meaningful, and it's a rich area with lots of interesting history.
Absolutely. Well, we can go on to the compass section here now. We have about 3.5 to 4 minutes, and actually, it's a pretty full compass.
It is, and there's a lot going on already. Unexpectedly, there was a lot going on all the way through COVID. We've had a very full active compass. There's a beautiful new show coming up at Canice Barnes in Kent. And speaking of people not knowing what cowabunga means, there's that great line from the Simon and Garfunkel song called America, where they talk about the man in the gabardine suit. And I was trying to get Patrick Sullivan to write a little sidebar saying what gabardine is. But for all of us who remember that song, it just has such a feeling of innocence. It's really a lost time where you could just get on a bus and drive across America and smoke while you traveled around. And the photos are quite beautiful. If for nothing else, they show people out at the beach being recreational with no masks on, all different kinds of landscapes of America. You can see some of the images online. It's National Poetry Month, and we are lucky to have some really savvy, smart people who love poetry up here. Helen Klein Ross is one of them. Interesting background, had worked in advertising and then began writing novels, but also has recently done a book of poetry. And so she talked about the creation of her Travelers Vademecum, a collection of poetry based on little short summaries of telegraph things that could be sent out. Scott Hath, who is so beloved around here, is doing an afternoon of songbook, of American songbook jazz, coming up April 25th online. There's going to be a concert to support area musicians. Not easy to be a musician ever, but certainly not now. Mark Scarborough who teaches all these wonderful classes about literature and poetry, right now is doing a series of classes on Emily Dickinson. So he wrote not only he chose a really interesting poem by her, but explains it in a way that makes you think, like, oh, poetry. Poetry is really great. Completely the opposite end from Emily Dickinson is Patrick Sullivan writing about American police procedurals on TV, on streaming. A lot of people have been sharing their favorite streams with us. I think that anybody who watches TV has a strong, interesting opinion on it. Patrick, of course, is a great reader and sort of a student of American police procedurals, so his is very interesting. And then we'll just try and mention when there are new books out by authors in the area. One of them is Lori Lyle from Sharon, a really super cute cover of old photos of her back in the day, but really a book about her life and her development as a writer from a young woman up to the present.
You know, it's interesting when I was looking at Patrick Sullivan's article, because due to the pandemic, I watch a lot of streaming events on my TV. And one of those, there's a show called The Closer, which starred Kira Sedgwick, of course.
Oh, right.
And that ran for 7 seasons. And when she decided to leave the show, they kept it going, and they retitled it. But it ran a total of 16 seasons. And you're right. It's a great article because people are drawn to these Law and Order shows. And I'm not talking about the hardcore ones, but the actual ones that are more like movie productions. You can't
get through a day without an NCIS.
It's come a long way since Dragnet, I guess, is what, and Dick Tracy.
What remember Adam 12?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Adam 12. But Patrick talks about Dragnet, and unexpectedly, Patrick, who's so interested in clothing and menswear, says he really feels that Jack Webb and Dragnet is very well dressed, and he talks very specifically about the little way his button down collar pops. So you can find that embedded in that story as well.
It's a great story.
And listen, I want to mention our spring cleanup banner, because once the snow has passed and it starts to dry out, time to get out there, new projects, lots of opportunity in this area to get help with your spring project.
And speaking about spring cleanup, let's see, Sharon has theirs this Saturday, weather permitting. If not, it'll be Sunday. I think there's one in Millerton and Armenia coming up in a couple of weeks, and Canaan had theirs last week. Hopefully this predicted snow, which I don't think we're going to get, but hopefully we don't get this predicted snow and we can all keep cleaning up and prepare for springtime.
Even if we get a little, it'll melt quick and onward.
Not quick enough for me.
Agreed.
All right, those are just some of the stories that are in this week's Lakeville Journal. Don't forget their companion paper, the Millerton News. You can find them online, tricornernews.com. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Take care. That is this week in the Lakeville Journal. TriCornerNews.com on the web. And you can find this show on our on-demand page, RobinHoodRadio.com. Click on on-demand. Click on This Week in the Lakeville Journal, and you can listen to the show in case you missed any portion of it.